the
recording
end.
In progress.
So we'd like to see which option you prefer. Discuss as we go along or at the end.
Does anyone on the board have a particular desire one way or the other? Seeing none, I think I guess I would like to take one at a time. So
yeah, that's what was our idea too. Great. So we'll stop at the end of each topic for the discussion. And at the very end, we can also talk about other recommendations if you have any additional questions. So starting with the class AA upgrades, first I want to respond to Mr. Parker's question from one of his questions from the October 7th hearing regarding impacts, potential impacts on the Golden Road from an upgrade to class AA of the West Branch Penobscot River. We discussed the question and we do not expect any impact. While Maine DOT does have a stormwater license, discharge license that could be impacted by EPA's disapproval of the stormwater discharge exemption in Maine law, the Golden Road is not a DOT road and thus not affected in that respect. Temporary and short-term stormwater discharges such as could occur during road construction or any type of road work are permitted under the law and would thus not affect the road in this particular circumstance. So again, we do not expect impact on the Golden Road from this upgrade. So Parker, does this information address your concerns?
Yes.
Okay, great, thank you. So as I mentioned, we had a number of upgrade proposals to class AA and we had recommended three of them for action, namely the waters in Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, the West Penobscot River and tributaries above the confluence with Ambejijis Lake and a section of the Southwest Branch of the St. John River. For these proposals, 99 to 100% of the watershed is in conservation land. We did not recommend another 8 waters with less or no conservation land because of regulatory uncertainty regarding stormwater discharges to class AA waters. These waters are listed on page 55 to 56, which is the Namakanta stream and tributaries, and pages 66 through 74 in your current packet, together with an explanation of the stormwater issues. 4 commenters, namely the Nature Conservancy, Maine Rivers, Natural Resources Council of Maine, and the Penobscot Nation, advocated for recommending some or all of the AA upgrades to protect the ecological, social, scenic, or recreational importance of these waters, especially with respect to Atlantic salmon. After consideration of the comments and further analysis, we have changed our original recommendation for Namakanta stream and tributaries, which are in the West Branch Penobscot watershed. This watershed is about 87% in conservation land, and the remaining 13% are small headwater streams that are very unlikely to see development or where development could even be permitted. So our current recommendation is to recommend this upgrade for action. The remaining 7 proposals are still not recommended at this point for upgrade in the packet before you. However, Mr. Kavanaugh will provide a recent change in the department's position on this issue. These waters have much smaller percentages of conservation land than the waters that we are recommending for upgrade. So the potential for development requiring a stormwater discharge is much higher. In your packet, you will see that we added an update to these 7 proposals. And for example, on page 66, you can read that text, noting that a new legislative proposal to address the stormwater discharge issue to be considered in the upcoming legislative session. And I will hand over to Mr. Kavanaugh to provide some more information on this legislative proposal.
So as Ms. Meidel noted, our suggested approach on this issue has just recently changed from what's in the board packet. The department had originally recommended or supported all of these upgrades, some of them came from our own staff, as we believe they're sound proposals. Later in the process, we changed that position to recommend just those that were in watersheds that were primarily conservation lands, and we did not recommend others. This was due to some regulatory uncertainty regarding existing statutory language for exemptions for stormwater discharges to AA and SA waters. The exemption was disapproved by EPA 7 years ago. Until just recently, it was unclear how or if this regulatory uncertainty could be resolved. And over the course of the last several months, we have worked with EPA to craft proposed stormwater legislation. If approved, the legislation will narrow this exemption and resolve this regulatory uncertainty that was the basis for our change in the position on the AA upgrades. We recently received a draft of the bill back from the revisor's office. So at this point, we know the proposed legislation will be heard this session. The bill is titled An Act to Control Stormwater Discharges to Class AA and SA Waters. So at this time, the department would support the board recommending all of the AA upgrades to the legislature, with the caveat that the board recommend that the Environment and Natural Resources Committee hear and vote on the stormwater bill first, before hearing and voting on the AA upgrades as part of the triennial review bill. If done in this order, the ENR committee will have an understanding of how existing and potentially future stormwater discharges to AA and SA waters will be regulated. We realize that the issue would not be fully resolved until the full legislature votes on the stormwater bill and EPA ultimately makes a decision on this revised water quality standard. But if the ENR committee votes to pass on the stormwater bill, that would be sufficient for the department to support these upgrades. So this is an important change from the written recommendations you have in your packet and the support of the comments that the board has received on this issue. We'd be happy to take any questions you might have on this.
Any questions from the board? I do appreciate that effort. That sounds like a great plan.
So next, we'd suggest you may want to consider and deliberate on comments that were or the issues of the upgrades to the Androscoggin and the Penobscot. And I'll give you some preliminary thoughts on that, if that's okay. So I expect, as contained in the board packet, you have noticed several interested parties do not agree with the department's recommendations regarding the reclass proposals for the lower Androscoggin on the lower Kazunska. Before we discuss the details of these proposals, I just want to note the department has a great deal of respect and appreciation for the good work of all the commenters advocating on behalf of these waters. In some instances, the department simply has a different perspective or interpretation of some of the technical, legal, and policy issues for these proposals. It's understood but worth repeating in this process, the department simply makes recommendations. And regardless of the department's recommendations, the board has the authority to recommend reclass proposals to the legislature if that is what you choose to do, or if that is what you believe you are required to do. And ultimately, the legislature has the sole authority to approve reclass proposals in law if that is what the legislature chooses to do. That's appropriate because reclass decisions are very important policy decisions that have potentially far-reaching implications for outcomes environmentally, socially, economically. It could be viewed as beneficial or not, depending on people's perspectives of the issues. Our intention in the department is to try to inform you as best we can on the technical and policy issues so you can have a fully informed decision-making process. As noted in the packet, we are not recommending upgrades to the lower Androscoggin and the lower Penobscot, and we would be happy to answer any questions you have as you deliberate on those proposals. The basis for our recommendations for the lower Androscoggin are found in the board packet on pages 63 and 65 and Appendix C at page 97. The basis for our recommendations on the lower Penobscot are found in the board packet from pages 75 to 77. I'll highlight now an important issue raised in the comments for both of these proposals. It is the issue of what does it mean to, quote, exceed the minimum standards of the next highest classification, and whether the board is required to recommend these proposals to the legislature. That is an interesting and a somewhat complex issue, open to some interpretation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have on that as you go through that in your deliberations. An important document for that discussion is the Department's Anti-Degradation Guidance, which is found in Appendix B, starting on page 84 of the board packet. And before we start the discussion on the lower end, Scott and Ms. Mydell and I will briefly summarize a new proposal that was received in advice for the lower end Scott.
So a new proposal that was received during the comment phase was for the development of a new water quality class, specifically for the entire Class C section of the Androscoggin River, which is from the Ellis confluence with the Ellis River down to Merrymeeting Bay. The new class was suggested as BX with the DO criterion between the existing Class B criterion of 7 mg/L and the Class C criterion of 5 mg/L. As explained in the recommendations document on page 49, developing or modifying a water quality standards water quality standard is typically a significant undertaking. Water quality standards have far-reaching implications on several issues, such as pollution prevention, permitting, enforcement actions, and remediation, and must therefore be developed very carefully. As you know, the department is evaluating several new or modified water quality standards that were proposed at the start of the triennial review period. These proposals create a challenging workload for staff that is already working at full capacity. As a result, the department recommends that any additional modifications to water quality standards would need to be proposed in the future triennial review process or via legislation. And I'll stop here for our discussion on the lower Androscoggin upgrade proposal.
Yes, Mr. Peltier.
First, I want to say thanks. There's a very good history here and explanation of a number of different topics. When I read through it, I'm not sure I fully interpret some of the things in here, so I just wanted two questions.
Yeah.
One is the department's has long-standing interpretation of the upgrade, what it means, and essentially you're looking for that 100% during all times, you know, and particularly including during the critical period times of getting from a Class B to, from a Class C to B, of going from 0.7 or 7 to 5, from 5 to 7. That's the department's interpretation of it. And my understanding is that the EPA has kind of confirmed that position as well.
Yes.
So, you know, with that, one of the things I also read in on page 65, you got it in there, it says that you're thinking that because of the conditions of Gulf Island Pond and probably the bathymetry of the water source and maybe past sedimentation, I'm not sure, but even without having the mills up above that, that we would not be able to meet the 7 part per million standard. Did I read that right?
That was a finding from a modeling report. It was done on the upper sections. I want to make that distinction. That was for the upper section above the dam, Gulf Island Dam. The section in question for the reclass is below the dam.
No, I understand.
Right. And that finding was from a modeling report. That section up above is Class C.
Now. Right. Right.
And that, but one of the findings was looking at the model app outputs and predicting what levels of DO would be reached in the river under certain scenarios. One scenario was, what if there was no discharges? What if there was no oxygenation system? It didn't meet 7. It's not required to meet 7. It's only required to meet 5. But the point is, our position on the lower end of an upgrade is, in order for water quality below the dam to be 7, we have to be able to, with regulatory requirements, create a boundary condition so that the water flowing over or through the dam is already 7 mg/L.
I understood. Those tests were based on 2010 and early on, and what I understood was that we just can't make that even without the presence of the mills above it. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And when I read the you know, back in, which I thought was very well prepared here in May, you had a legislative update to the department. And you talk about how with the current permit limits, and this is on page 103, just to make sure I get this right. You've got the different facilities down here, and you show the current permit limits, and then you have the new permit limits, and then you have actual discharge. And then that's what I'm assuming with this meeting is 95% of the time over the last 3 years.
Yes.
And what I see is, for the most part, they're doing a very good job here in terms of meeting these standards. And that by bumping it up, if I do the math right, I'm seeing that, for instance, the dorm mill would be meeting it, even with the new standard, 95% of the time. If I was to look at the numbers, and, you know, in Rumford, it'd be probably closer to maybe 75% of the time they would make that under the new standards. So we're close, but we're not there. And, but even with these, we're still with the conditions, the geological conditions in the river, we're still gonna have a problem. This is part of that. We're never going to get there.
Well, again,
that's my question.
Yeah, I want to make the distinction that finding of not meeting it. That was the upper section. So
correct.
This is our assessment of what it would take to create the boundary condition at the dam. We're not saying that our expectation is this would create a B condition in the upper river.
That's right.
Or in the depths of Gulf Island Pond. It was just the water flowing over through the dam, which is more the upper section of the river as it flows through the dam. And so this is to create a boundary condition with regulatory certainty. It would always be 7.
Yeah.
And if I could, I just want to make a distinction as we talk about discharges. I want to make it clear that a discharge is not an existing use. It's not a designated use. It's not protected per se. It's not a right. It's a privilege granted by the state and the federal government if certain conditions are met. And the overarching condition is that water quality standards will be met under the license load of the discharge in combination with other discharges under the critical conditions of low river flow and high temperature. If we can make that finding, we can issue a permit.
Yeah.
I just want to make that distinction in the upgrade discussion that we're merely pointing out what the potential implications are of the reclass, but we're not saying the reclass couldn't go forward or is prohibited from going forward because of these implications. We just always want to make the board as a decision maker and the legislature as a decision maker fully informed about the potential.
And I appreciate that. I think that's very well put. Plus, you're also considering future, needs that might be.
Yes.
In the some of the testimony we heard last time, there was comments by representatives from the industry suggesting that once you attain a certain level, that you can't ratchet back down. I'm not seeing that. And there was a comment that was made that, well, we're close, we're 6.5, you know, so we can't go back down. But when I look at the lot, it's either going to be a 5 or 7.
Yes, we agree. It's driven by the class that it is. And so when we look at, so this comes into play, I think that may have been about a discussion about newer increased discharges.
Right.
So that's part of anti-degradation. So anti-degradation is the concept of when you have water quality better than the minimum, that you want to hold on to that. You don't want it to slip.
Yeah.
And that's done in two ways. One is this issue of when you protect for the next highest class, if actual water quality is meeting that next highest class, that's one part of anti-degradation. The other part is how do you deal with newer increased discharges? So the way we deal with newer increased discharges is we have to look at what is the remaining assimilated capacity in the water body using the minimum threshold. It can never go below that. And we would measure as best we can what is the actual water quality under critical conditions, and then also take into account any other influence any license load would exert that isn't already accounted for in that data. And then if there's any assimilated capacity there, we ask the question, is this discharge going to use more than 20% of that remaining assimilated capacity?
If it is, that would be considered a significant lowering. Again, it will never, can never go below the minimum threshold, but you've got some water quality that's above and beyond that. If you're going to use more than 20% for that new or increased discharge, then the burden on the applicant is to demonstrate, and we have to be able to find, that there's important social or economic benefit to the state to allow that to occur. And if we can make that finding, and there's been an analysis that there's no way to prevent this from happening. I mean, there's no way to treat it to a certain level to eliminate using up that more than 20%, and they put in the best treatment that they can, then that could potentially be licensed. You know, in our anti-degradation guidance, it talks about the analysis for newer increased discharges is based on managing that good water quality above the minimum for the economic, social, and environmental benefit of the state. And that process I just outlined is a way to manage that and balance those three issues.
And that 20% is kind of just, that's formulaic.
That was developed in our guidance. And I think it would be an interesting discussion just to talk about that guidance, but if you want, at some point.
One of the other comments that were made was that, and this was by the attorney representing FOMB, was that, well, we can just tweak the existing permits. I'm thinking it's more than just tweaking the permits. You know, that would allow, you know, the suggestion that let's go ahead and pass it, but you could just go up there and tweak the permit. But when you either open up a permit, it's either one or the other. And just, I guess, I wasn't really convinced by that statement either.
Yeah, I guess it's worth mentioning that there was a big difference between Class C and a DO criteria of 5 and Class B and a DO criteria of 7. That is a huge difference.
Correct.
And the major difference, and we've had a lot of discussions in the department on this with our water quality engineers, there is really very little assimilative capacity in Class B waters. Right. At critical conditions when the water temperature is high and the DO levels go down because there's less capacity to hold oxygen at higher temperatures, there is just a sliver of remaining assimilative
capacity. That's kind of how I understand it. Yes.
At Class B. And there is a lot in Class C.
Yeah.
And that is the major challenge. And so, but again, in terms of what happens if it gets upgraded, that's a directive to the department on how to manage that water body. If that's the new minimum criteria, we will then always have to craft every license to ensure that that discharge, in combination with other discharges under critical conditions and low river flows, is not going to cause that DO to go below 7. And that's where some of these predictions come up on the changes in the license limits that would have to occur. And again, that doesn't prevent it from being upgraded, but you just want people to be informed that there are implications from the new classification because it is a very rigorous classification.
Yeah. And that's why when it leaves next, that's where to address.
Mr. Pelletier, I'm going to hold off for a minute if we can, if you've got another question, because I think we've lost Mr. Parker.
We have.
And we need to get him back. So we probably will take a 5-minute break while we make sure he's back and the signal is stable. And I do have some questions too. So by all means, keep pondering.
Recording stopped.
Hi, Jim. Can you hear me?
Okay. I'm back, I guess.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Our microphone is once again live. Mr. Parker is back with us.
My spectrum seems to be screwing up, but I'll keep coming and going.
Recording in
We're
progress.
We're going to pause every time you're not there. So if you need to
worry about that.
Okay, just a quick capsule summary. I don't think you caught much of the last answer. Is that something you can do in 30 seconds? I doubt it.
How long ago did you drop off?
Oh, an hour or so.
Good 5 minutes.
I guess just to summarize, we talked about that there's a big difference between Class C and Class B. Class B is a much more rigorous standard. Discharges are not a right or an existing or a designated use, just a privilege granted as long as we can find water quality standards will be met. And the classifications change, it's a directive to the department to manage that water body under the new class, and we're legally obligated to make sure that the discharge will never cause water quality to drop below that new standard.
And I'd probably just add that despite conflicting testimonies that were provided to the board, one being that you don't have to ratchet, you can't ratchet back down. It is either going to be a 7 parts per million or a 5 parts per million standard. And then the other one being that it's pretty complicated to just tweak a permit to allow these things to condition if you were to move forward with a reclassification.
But I guess it depends on what people mean by tweak. I mean, we can do an assessment as best as we can with either using computer models or just our engineers' brains and mathematics to predict what the lowering of the limits should be. And you know, in the case of the Androscoggin, what you've seen in our testimony was those are fairly significant reductions. We predicted about a 54% reduction from each mill. And then, you know, then there's a discussion, I think, in front of the legislature of what the interested parties would have to weigh in. Well, what does that mean to their operation? I can't testify to that. We can just say this is what would be necessary. And that was just an example allocation. You know, it's a pie that has to be divvied up, and how it's divvied up would be done through a licensing process. There might be some negotiation amongst the parties, or we would ultimately come up with what we think is the best decision. That can be subject to appeal to the board and to courts. And in the end, we don't really know where it ends or how it ends up. And that was part of our testimony on the Androscoggin, and also a similar comment on the Bezumska. Because this is such it almost feels like shoehorning it into this new class because there's so little left there in terms of assimilative capacity. In our view, it will lead to some regulatory uncertainty. And because a lot of these issues are arguable in terms of even how the limits are derived, what the limits will ultimately be, how we interpret our anti-degradation statute, that all of those things can be argued differently by different parties and certainly have been in past proceedings for licensing, and it can become very contentious and go to appeal, and it may take years before the dust finally settles and we know what the end result is. And that's not to say an upgrade can't occur, but again, we just want you to be aware that there are implications to any upgrade because it is a new management scheme for that river that is much more rigorous than the current management scheme.
I appreciate how you presented the information to allow that. But to go back to the 54, that 54% was not a cumulative reduction. It was by each party,
yes.
54%.
That was just one example. Again, there would be multiple ways. We had to reduce the ultimate total loading at the dam by a certain amount of pounds.
Yeah.
And so we could come up with a dozen different allocations amongst the parties. We just, for as an example, want to say, well, what if we reduced everyone's limits by an equal percentage? What would that look like?
Okay, I got
that. Got us to the total reduction we needed. There were many other ways that could be done. And in the final licensing process, it may not be done this way. It could be done completely different. Again, through negotiation or different analysis of
I'm winding this down almost. But I like the fact that we can't the concept of putting out this BX model or standard was, I thought, interesting because it gets us to a point that could be allow greater regulatory certainty.
Yes.
But I understand that it's not just a matter of just coming up with that number. That's a regulatory, there's costs involved in staff time. With this recent, you know, federal funding that's coming to the states and a lot of it dedicated toward water quality, are there opportunities here to help address these issues, this issue, not only to help address staff time, but also to help some of the mills with helping them better upgrade their facilities. Is there opportunity here that we're talking about? It's too early.
I would say no. That money is really for municipal infrastructure. So there's money that we got through the ARPA funds for municipal infrastructure. There's money that we're going to get through this new federal infrastructure bill. But that's really geared towards municipal infrastructure, sewer systems, pump stations, treatment plants. We really don't have a program that provides loan or grant money to private industries.
There's funding sources that are new federal funds that are dedicated now, but there's, my understanding, there's a larger umbrella group that you can look for. And how about just for in terms of helping get more staff or something?
Yeah.
For our staff, yeah. With the infrastructure money through that bill, we see that we're going to have a drastically increased workload to manage that more money going out the door. That's a good problem to have, but we're probably going to request a couple of new engineers to help manage that, and that would be funded through that money. For that particular job of managing that infrastructure money for the municipalities.
Okay, I'm going to hold it right there for a moment. We've lost Mr. Parker again.
Recording stopped.
Bob, I've relocated to a different location. Hopefully they'll stay on now. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
I hope he has his
phone. Nice work.
I'm all set. Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I've relocated to another whole site. I drive 2.5 miles with my one hand, but I made it. I'm here.
Well, with the other hand.
Sorry about this.
Recording in progress.
Back on the end of that first presentation, I'm pretty comfortable with what they've talked about, so I've got a good handle on that.
Good. For the record, we thank you for that. I believe we are set to continue. Okay, Mr. Pelletier, more questions?
And this is easy for me. I just wanted to thank the staff for pulling this together in a way that I can pretty well mostly understand it. And your explanations, and I'm done. Thank you for the board for letting me do.
That's the whole reason for this. Mr. Sanford, anything? No. Mr. Parker, do you have any questions for staff?
No, I think what I understood was going on was they were talking about coming up with some kind of a special classification somewhere between B and C. I'm opposed to that because I think you just add a lot more gray to a lot of other areas.
Yeah. Well, we won't be taking any votes today anyway, so that discussion may come up again when we get back to it on December 16th. But thank you. Right, yeah. Yeah, we're going to grade them.
I'm comfortable with what they presented.
Okay. I have a few questions, I suppose. First of all, we talked about what we would have to do for permitting in the Androscoggin, but unlike the Penobscot and the Kennebec, that river doesn't start in this state. So we don't really have any control over what comes in from Gorham, for instance, correct?
Not direct control, but we could comment to EPA. Those licenses, right. New Hampshire is not a delegated state, so EPA writes the licenses.
Mm-hmm.
So we could comment to EPA, and they should take those into consideration. And they did last time. We've been through this in the past in 2005 time period when we did a total maximum daily load analysis on the whole river. It was non-attainment to Bell Pond Pond. We went through a very extensive modeling and licensing process and appeal process on that. And part of that was the New Hampshire mill. So there's a protocol in place for our recommendations on what's needed for standards to be met in Maine to drive the licenses in New Hampshire, the mill license in New Hampshire.
And part of that really informs our own deliberations because we need to understand the relationship between us and the federal government. And so I'm going to sort of work myself through this process to see if I got it right. But basically, this is the Clean Water Act. It's federal. The funding for it to a delegated state is federal. So whatever we do has to be approved, be acceptable to the federal government who's paying for it under the Clean Water Act. So if we monkey with standards such that we have, and Maine is pretty special. We, not only we delegated, but we have very stringent protocols for assessing these rivers that have standards about this dissolved solids, about oxygen, and also biota. So not all states have that. So if we have a classification that we're making that doesn't meet our own standards that have been approved by the federal government, then they can simply say no. And in fact, sometimes when we reclassify like Long Creek, they do say no. So it's not just a matter of creating a new standard or fudging our own standards, because then we run into trouble with the people who are paying for it. Is that reasonably accurate?
Well, I guess there's a distinction. I mean, you certainly have the authority, or the legislature has the authority, to upgrade a water body if it chooses to. And I wouldn't envision that EPA would ever disapprove that.
Upgrades generally not.
It's conceivable that you could create a water body that could be found, upgrade a water body, and it could be found to be a non-attainment later and not meeting that new standard. And then that would drive various regulatory requirements to try to bring it into attainment. Mm-hmm. But EPA does have to approve any new water quality standards, such as criteria and those sorts of things. Ultimately, they have to approve that.
I'm also wondering whether climate change plays into this, the goalpost moving, because when we don't reach attainment in some cases, or we have we don't meet standards, for a class B, for instance, when it dips below, is it because summers are drier, air is warmer, the river just isn't what it was, and now the goalposts are moving? Is there any assessment to how much climate change is affecting the fact that for 20 years we haven't been able to get that little extra that we've been fighting about for years?
I think there's a general expectation that waters are going to get warmer, and as waters get warmer, the capacity to hold dissolved oxygen diminishes, and it could be warmer, for longer extended periods of time. I mean, there's uncertainty to that, but that seems to be the trend.
Mm-hmm. And so
yes, for a class B criteria, it would make it harder to meet that during those warmer periods.
Yeah, because the struggle I guess I'm having is that we've been at this for decades now. It's been so close for a long time, and the arguments we're having now are virtually identical to what we were having 20 years ago. And there's legislation in every year trying to fudge this up. So I'm having difficulty identifying what is the problem that is preventing us from fixing this after so many years. There's been a lot of finger pointing over the years. What are the discharges? Is it municipalities? Is it paper mills? Is it agriculture? What is it? And we've never really gotten to the point where we could say, this is what we need to fix in order to get there. And if the goalposts are moving at the same time, we may never get there. So is there any internal discussion with the department about can we get this to be and how soon and what would it take?
Well, the analysis and testimony we gave to the legislature is if it was a class B and the criteria is 7, we know we would at least have to create a boundary condition of 7. And to do that, we would reduce the mills loadings by some percentage, as an example, 54%. We believe that would at least create a starting point of 7 as a boundary condition, or have regulatory controls for that to be there.
Well, I guess part of my point is a lot of the paper mill discharges have disappeared since we started arguing about this 20 years ago. That's declined, and yet the results are almost identical to what they were 20 years ago. So if that were the sole problem and their discharges were the major concern, maybe that's fixable with tightening up the permits, but apparently that decrease hasn't changed much.
I think it comes back to what we've talked about before, that the 7 is a very rigorous criteria. It is, from what I can see, the most stringent in New England. Mm-hmm. And there is very little assimilated capacity under those critical conditions. When it gets warm, there is just a sliver of assimilated capacity left as compared to class C. And I think it's all those combined effects that you talked about, 9.0, 4.0, warm temperature, urban population, industry. I think it's a tight fit for, in that scenario, that kind of watershed to have Class B waters because it's such a rigorous criteria. I think it's worth stating that, you know, Class C waters are very good, right, are very good water quality, meets all the requirements of the Clean Water Act, meets all the requirements of state water quality law. Class B is very, very good water quality. And even on these rivers where we're debating what the class should be, the currently C, the actual water quality is very good.
Mm-hmm. Fishable and swimmable.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Any other questions from the board? Mr. Parker, any questions?
Yeah. I just comments along what you were talking about, Bob. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, there may be some issues with climate change, whatever, but you've got to remember these rivers have tremendous benthic layers and stuff in them that built up over the years from these mills, and they still exist. And I think they may be having a long-term impact that we're really not have a real good handle on. Because when you've got rivers full of sludge and bark and everything else, and that's decaying, it's going to have an impact. So we can clean up everything that's going into the river, but we still got a river that's pretty dirty in a lot of cases.
I can speak to that a bit if you want. So we have assessed that in Gulf Island Pond behind Gulf Island Dam. We do believe there's a sediment oxygen demand that drives the dissolved oxygen levels at depth in the lowest depths of the pond, but that would necessarily drive DL levels at the upper section of the river.
Mm-hmm.
Or beyond the dam.
And just if I could make one other point. I'm not in licensing, so I don't deal with permitting, and I'm not intimately familiar with the Androscoggin, but with
especially with the establishment of the Gulf Island Pond Oxygenation Project, we do have proof, and that's why you're seeing, part of why you're seeing the good conditions downstream. It's just they haven't been quite enough for us to be able to make the leap to say yes, Class B will be attained at all times. But things have gotten significantly better in a number of respects.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Mr. Pelletier, one second, we need to.
Is it okay to link, ask a question?
No.
No. Okay.
Thanks. Ms. Pelletier?
Yep. Just to follow up on Jim's point, and it's something I've wondered about with Gulf Island Pond. Again, I think it's a lot of with the bathymetry of that area and the accumulated sludges over time. And, you know, it's not a realistic matter of just trying to increase the amount of oxygen that's being pumped into that section to try to upgrade things, I would assume, because that's a constant maintenance issue and licensing issue as well. And that's my first question. But I also wonder about, do you think that there might be mitigative opportunities here where there could be some dredging of some of those accumulated sediments over time?
The first question. So back in 2005, when we had pretty significant changes to the licenses for the three mills to deal with the issue of attainment of Class C in Gulf Island Pond, because arguably it was not meeting Class C in the pond. And we revised those license limits pretty significantly to do a couple of different things. One, we controlled phosphorus to prevent algal blooms, because there were algal blooms occurring in the river, and that's been successful. So we're not seeing algal blooms any longer. And we reduced the total suspended silage limits in the licenses to deal with this SOD issue. So, you know, we can't eliminate the historic SOD loadings, but we can prevent new accumulative SOD.
Yes.
Yeah,
so. Thank you. Mr. Parker, any questions?
And we would expect the SOD levels to drop over time, whether or not it could be mediated through dredging. I don't know if that's practical or not.
Maybe.
Okay.
It is now.
Okay.
the video that's on.
For those who can hear, we're just fixing a small technical problem.
Jim, were you able to hear Brian's answer?
Yeah, he's thinking about it.
Jim, can you hear us?
I've got everybody fine at my new site.
Any other questions from the board? Great. And just a process question. The question was, could members of the audience ask questions? And this is technically a deliberative session of the board. There will be opportunities at the end for comment from the public. And also, any questions can be posed at that time for consideration when we bring them up next time. I think written comments are still appropriate after this, too, if I remember right. Or we pass written comments. Okay, so. But yes, and any public comment after we're done with this section, they can be noted. So with that, I think we can move on from the Andrew Stockton. That being the case, you may proceed.
Okay. So before we start the discussion on the Lower Przemyska River upgrade proposal, which is on pages 75 through 77 in your package, I briefly summarize the proposal for an amendment that we received during the public comment period. And this proposal amendment was contingent on the situation that the upgrade to Class B was not supported by the board. The proposal consisted of a statutory amendment to the classification of the river that prohibits new discharges after January 1st, 2023. And as explained in the recommendations document, new and increased discharges to any water body are subject to anti-degradation requirements in accordance with Maine statute and the department's interpretation of those requirements as outlined in the waste discharge program guidance, which is in Appendix B, and Mr. Kavanaugh spoke to that earlier on already. The explicit prohibition in this particular case for the lower Przemyska on any new discharges above and beyond anti-degradation requirements would be an important and seldom used policy decision of the legislature and likely to be of great interest to the communities in this area of the river. The department does not recommend this amendment at this time as it supersedes the existing process to regulate new or increased discharges. And Mr. Kavanaugh can provide some additional perspective on this issue.
And I would say our recommendation here is not a strenuous recommendation, because I think this is really a policy decision. It's not a technical issue, but we felt obligated to put some recommendation in the package and to allow for some further discussions. So I've got a couple of prepared thoughts on that. So the department views this as a policy decision rather than any type of technical evaluation. And the board packet recommended against it, as it is a very rarely used prohibition that would supersede the normal process for evaluating new or increased discharges, which we talked about a little bit about before, and I may touch on it again here just for clarity. The only place that a site-specific no new discharge prohibition has been used in statute previously is in the Class B section of the Upper Przemyska, directly above the section in question that is proposed for reclass to Class B now. I believe that was enacted in 1999 during a discussion on upgrading that upper section from Class B to A. That upgrade did not occur, but the prohibition on no new discharges in that section was enacted at that time. The normal process to evaluate a new or increased discharge is outlined in the department's anti-degradation guidance containing a packet starting on page 84, specifically paragraphs 7 through 12, on pages 89 to 93. A newer increased discharge could only be licensed if we first make a finding that the discharge, in combination with other discharges, under critical conditions of low river flow and high temperature, does not cause or contribute to the failure of the water body to meet standards, such as dissolved oxygen. This licensing standard applies to all discharges. But that would be the first step. We'd have to make sure that that doesn't happen for any newer increased discharge. Above and beyond that, we must evaluate if the new or increased discharge would consume more than 20% of the remaining assimilated capacity of the receiving water. If the proposed new increased discharge was projected to use more than 20% of the remaining assimilated capacity, we could only approve the discharge if we found, after opportunity for public participation, that the action is necessary to achieve important social and economic benefits to the state. This process is designed to evaluate and manage the environmental, economic, and social benefits of that margin of water quality above and beyond the minimum criteria. So I think the policy decision embedded in this proposal to prevent any new discharges is, does the board and then the legislature believe there's a compelling reason to make that decision now, preemptively, prior to any actual discharge proposal that would include a discussion of the range of environmental, economic, and social issues? Again, our recommendation in the package is against that because there is a process in place that is meant to deal with this issue in the context of an actual discharge proposal. But ultimately, this is a policy decision, and the board could certainly recommend this proposal to the legislature, where we expect there would be a robust discussion that would include all the adjacent communities and interested parties.
Thank you. Questions from the board or comment? I guess I just weigh in on that then myself. Having worn the other hat, I'm always very leery about making policy on the board. I think we implement policy, but we don't make it. I think the possibility of making a recommendation to the legislature to make policy is probably acceptable. So that can be part of our deliberative discussion, but whether we would actually go forward and just rule and say no more development, we're even talking stormwater runoff, I presume, as discharges. Or is that true? I mean, so a housing development.
Regulated stormwater.
Right, yeah. So a housing development, for instance, would maybe run afoul of this.
Not necessarily.
Okay. Because I don't even know the full scope of what would be banned from happening.
Not all stormwater is regulated explicitly. Mm-hmm. Certain types, industrial types of stormwater, some municipal stormwater, some construction related stormwater. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other questions or comments from the board? And I'm looking at Mr. Parker to see if you have anything.
No, I'm fine. No problem, no questions.
Then I think we can proceed.
One other issue, just so that basically concludes the three major issues that we had, the topics we wanted to discuss, the AA upgrades, the lower Androscoggin and the lower Presumpscot River. And just one note, in the current package at the very end, there are some very minor statutory fixes that could normally go into an omnibus bill, but we put them in here because we're already amending the statute. And during the review of this amendment to the lower Presumpscot River, last statutory amendment, we noticed that there was a typo, or at least a misspelling or unusual spelling of Sacarapa in the statute with just one C, S-A-C, Arapa. And most typically it's spelled with double C. I looked at a number of documents, including our hydropower licensing. And so we are proposing to add a new issue to the correct a spelling mistake omnibus type item. We haven't figured out the exact language yet. So it's going to be either Sacarapa in parentheses, Sacarapa with two C, or Sacarapa with one C, AKA Sacarapa with two C, something like that. But we just wanted to alert you to that minor change that we're proposing to add to the document, if that's okay.
And if I could, I did have some general comments on the Presumpscot proposals. It may be repeating a little bit of what we discussed, but we talked in some detail about the Androscoggin. I just wanted to give you some preliminary thought about the Presumpscot if you want to deliberate on that. So that's okay. Mm-hmm. So we talked about Class B is much more rigorous than Class C that it applies to the Presumpscot. It's one of the most rigorous standards in New England. During critical conditions of high temperature, which can be as high as 27 or 28 degrees C, when the yield capacity of the waters is lowest, there's very little assimilated capacity. So even without human influence from non-point source or point source discharges, the criterion is rigorous, and under those critical conditions, just barely met. This has become more apparent to the department with the use of data sondes, where we can acquire long stretches of continuous data It has also become more apparent as we've evaluated upgrade proposals on the Androscoggin and the Kazumska with more robust data sets. Critical conditions are what matter in terms of stressors to aquatic life. They are also the conditions used to evaluate the impact of any licensed discharges. And again, I think this is worth repeating because I think it's important. And since I've mentioned discharges, I want to make it clear that a licensed discharge is not in existing use. It's not a designated use under the water quality standards, and a discharge is not a right, but a privilege granted by the state and federal government as long as certain conditions are met. The overarching condition being that the discharge in combination with other discharges under critical conditions of low receiving water flow and temperature will not prevent water quality standards from being attained. Further, any potential changes in license limits for discharges that may be required due to a change of classification in no way prohibits the board from recommending an upgrade to the legislature or the legislature from enacting an upgrade. However, the department will inform you as best we can on what may be required in terms of reductions for licenses. Admittedly, our position on these upgrade proposals may seem conservative, but recommending upgrades where we know the standards will not be met, or albeit infrequently, will likely lead to a great deal of uncertainty on how to manage the regulatory requirements for the new, sometimes unattainable criteria. I'll also mention upgrades are essentially permanent. Once you upgrade a water body, it's very, very hard to ever do a downgrade. It's not impossible, but it's almost impossible. And specific to the Kazumska, the chart in your packet on page 77 shows DO data collected via SOND this summer. It outlines a variety of reasons why we're not supporting the upgrade on that page. And to give you similar information to what we discussed on the Androscoggin in terms of license limits, if upgraded to Class B, we would need to reduce the currently licensed BOD loadings from the Sappy Mill and the Portland Westbrook wastewater treatment facility by approximately 25%. And that would be an example allocation. The actual allocation could vary amongst the discharges. We believe this would be a legally and technically defensible approach. It would address the measurable impact from the discharges. Both facilities have operated well under what these new potential limits would be for the past 5 years, with the exceptions of two explosions that would have occurred in the Portland Water District. But I'll repeat this, similar to what we said in the Androscoggin. However, any license decisions are subject to appeal, and interested parties could have different views on the extent of the reductions that would be necessary, given the extremely limited assimilated capacity, or arguably the lack of any assimilated capacity under critical conditions of low flow and temperature. So there will be uncertainty in the outcome. We would expect it would be at a minimum what we have projected. Any future or new increased discharges would likely not be allowed due to the lack of any remaining assimilated capacity. Any concerns the adjacent towns may have regarding potential future growth and potential permit limit reductions are unknown to the department at this point. We expect this will be made clear during the legislative process if the board recommends the upgrade. Again, the potential impacts on permit limit does not in any way prohibit the board from recommending an upgrade. If that is what you decide to do, we just want you to be informed of this issue.
Anything else from the board?
I have one more very final note. Yes. Going back actually to a question that you had asked at the October 5th posting for the triennial review, and you had asked about the mileage of waters in Indian lands, which is an issue that affects some of the related federal water quality standards that are presently in effect in those waters. EPA defined Indian waters as waters adjacent to land held in trust and lands in the tribe's reservations. And we have done a GIS analysis and determined that rivers and streams in Indian lands account for approximately 1% of all main rivers and streams. Mm-hmm. So that was just wrapping up an old talk.
Great, thank you very much.
And that was all I had.
Good, thank you. I think we're done with that section.
I think it's the board could do this because it wants, but then I think you might want to have an opportunity, but
permit regulations and all that, whatever.
Right, yeah. Okay, I think I will think. Okay, so now, well, I'm going to invite a brief public comment. And again, we've had our testimony, we've had all the submissions on this from the public. So what I'm really looking for is any clarifications or questions that have come up based on what you've heard and that you think we should be considering based on what we heard today and the task that we have of where we're going with these upgrades and proposals. So is there anyone, I will check first in the room, and then anyone online who has a brief question or comment to make based on what they've heard during the discussion today.
Can you tell them to raise their hand online?
Yes, and if you could raise your hand online so we know. I can see at least a couple. And sir, you are in the room, so you may go first.
I have comments. It's maybe two pages, and it's relatively...
Okay, if you can have
3 minutes. Pages.
Yeah, just real quick.
Okay.
Yes, and do identify.
Peter Rubens. I'm with the Grow LA River Working Group and work with a group of river groups, Friends of Merrimeeting Bay, Androscoggin Land Trust, the cities of Lewis and Auburn, Brunswick and others, Maine Rivers, TU, and Grow LA. 50 years ago, our Senator Ed Muskie passed the Clean Water Act and acts over the President Nixon's veto.
Actually, I'm going to invite you to cut through the chase because we've had testimony, we've had public submissions to the record.
Okay.
What I'm actually looking for is any discussion, okay, comments or questions about what you've heard today.
All right. We have a couple questions represented by our coalition. In your current statement of not recommended for upgrade at this time, you state a 2011 report summarizing department data showed that Class B criteria for DO and aquatic life were not always attained. This is 2021 with 10 years more data. We are volunteers on DEP volunteer program trained in your data collection and submit to the DEP. From the data from Gulf Island Pond to Brunswick, we provided for DEP, and DEP shows that from 2004 to 2019, the DO geometric means meet above 7 parts per million in all years and meets below E. coli standards. We also sent the information showing that CSO in Auburn is down to 0. Lewiston has cut CSO in half. They spent $50 million over the past 10 years. This does not even take into consideration the closure of the Pixels 2 digesters and Rumford's new waste treatment plant due to come online in the next couple of years. Our understanding is that 7Q10 model event would break the DEP model. And this is the main holdup to reclassification. Our question to you and the DEP is how many 7Q10 events have been documented over the past 20 years? Is there an answer to this question?
Well, thank you. That will be possibly in our deliberations, and I appreciate it.
Okay, well, there's a couple more questions.
Okay.
It seems that the paper company's buffers are more important to their ability to buy and sell each other than the cities of 200,000 people in the lower Androscoggin. We understand.
So what's the question?
I'm getting there, sir.
Okay. How fast do you expect to get there? I don't mean to be rude. What I'm saying is we're looking for a certain type of input.
I understand. We understand the Gulf Island Pond is a problem with deep hole, but the pond outside the deep hole actually meets 7 parts per million continuous monitoring station at Center Bridge and Turner, near 7 parts per million. Could Brian Kavanaugh or Rob Moeller comment on the data from the Center Bridge continuous monitoring station?
Good, thank you.
Is that possible?
It won't be possible here now.
I see, okay.
But again, we will be having another deliberation and a vote on December 16th, so.
Our concern is lower Androscoggin and Gulf Island Pond Dam through Brunswick. After the request for the DEP SON data collection, the DEP installed SONs below Gulf Island Pond below the Great Falls in LA in the Durham boat launch at a minimum low flow drought conditions in August 2019. The results were included in our application to you and the DO at all locations. this is a minimum flow license to Gulf Island Pond. Does this qualify for 7Q10 on that date in 2019 when the SONs were set up? Brian Kavanaugh told us the legislature sets classifications on our bill LD 677 676 has been tabled awaiting DEP and BEP assessments. Your recommendations not to upgrade the Environment and Natural Resources Committee basically blocks our bill from going forward to the legislature.
I think it's already in the legislature, is it not?
It is in the legislature. So it's been tabled.
So I'm not sure the BEP blocks anything when it's in the legislature. They do everything.
Well, then evidently the DEP right now has voted, recommended not to. So it's basically waiting for the BEP's response on this.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time the legislature ignored DEP.
Okay. We would like to make a recommendation to DEP and the BEP to require hydro plants on the river to be required to contract electronic continuous monitoring devices and report to DEP and publicly the information and data that is needed to know exactly what is happening in the environment in the Androscoggin. This was required on the Monty license in 86, and DEP allowed them to stop taking data at that time. We submit that this monitoring should be reinstated from Gulf Island Pond Hydro down to Brunswick to establish scientific data to be able to make classification decisions. We ask that the board recommend to the Environment Natural Resources Council that the reclassification should go forward to the legislature to make that decision.
Thank you very much. I see hands raised online. Nobody else in the room is planning to speak, right? Okay. And I guess Mr. Augustine, is it? See your hand up first.
Good morning, and thanks for taking very brief comments and questions I have. Hopefully you've got me unmuted as well.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. There was a comment about federal funds not being applicable, and I thought it was an omission to leave out the fact that communities and municipalities such as Rumford could be using those funds to upgrade their discharge, their waste discharge systems. So I hope that's taken into account. The last question I had related to the dissolved oxygen issue at Gulf Island Dam. The segment of the river that we're most concerned about is actually the lower part of the Androscoggin below Great Falls. And it's pretty clear to me that good oxygenation occurs in the river between Gulf Island Dam and the segment of the river that's actually being considered for the upgrade. So I don't really understand why the dissolved oxygen level at Gulf Island Deep Hole is so critically important when the river undergoes oxygenation further downstream. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for the record, are you representing any particular group or just yourself?
My comments can be considered representative of the position for Maine Rivers Organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Plumley. You're still muted.
Great. I just, all right, unmuted now. Thank you. I'd love to participate in this discussion. Realize it's not my place to do so. I had contacted Suzanne and Bill about addressing some of the information that DEP has provided since it provided its final recommendation on the lower Presumpscot River. I represent Friends of the Presumpscot River, the applicant for the Class B upgrade, and a growing multitude of supporters. First, I just want to address some factual things. In the staff memo dated December 2nd, quote, multiple detailed comments in support of a water quality upgrade were received for the lower Androscoggin and lower Presumpscot rivers. Likewise, multiple detailed comments in opposition to those upgrades were received. For the Presumpscot River, this is grossly misleading. The Presumpscot reclassification received overwhelming support and absolutely no opposition in the written comments document that was delivered as part of your packet. The word Presumpscot appeared 77 times in the written document. All the testimony was in favor of Class B now for the lower river from a large and diverse group of organizations and individuals. The transcription of spoken testimony on October 7th included one comment in opposition to Class B and multiple comments in favor. So I just wanted to correct the record. What struck me about the additional information provided by the DEP was I felt like they were piling on to their existing position and just trying to really make sure that it stuck. So that's why I wanted to comment on that. Under update number one, which Suzanne reported out on about the proposed amendment, I guess it's just semantics. It was an option. We offered four possible options. Obviously, we want to see Class B for the lower Penobscot. That's our goal. But there are three other options we put on the table in case you guys weren't comfortable with that. And so that was the only purpose for that, is a fallback position in case there's a stalemate of some kind. I've also learned in the meeting today that the anti-degradation requirements, which I hadn't understood previously, is really just a way to divvy the gap in DO between the 8 or 9 average DO for the lower Penobscot River and the 5 for Class C at 20% of the time, so that the 5 serves as an asymptote that can be approached but never quite reached. And I'm disappointed that it's not really an anti-degradation policy. It's a way to spread it out among a number of applicants. My other comments are on a second note provided at the end of their final, quote unquote, final recommendations from the DEP that painted a picture of, let me get to my notes on that, characterized the summer of 2021 as extraordinarily favorable to high water quality and suggests that future summers will likely backslide to lower water quality. They offered no data to support this assertion. And we see issues with all three legs of the assertion. One is their assertion that the department, quote, the department notes that the point source loadings to the river were at historic lows during the summer of 2021, primarily due to limited operations at Sappy North American Mill, unquote. I don't have data on the effluent from Sappy this year, but I do know that the trend has been that they've been selling off equipment, reducing the size of their mill and their operation, and they've had less effluent as a result. Started with, you know, cessation of pulping in 1999. That's the trend. I don't have any data that leads me to believe that this isn't just the new norm for them, and that I have no reason to believe they're going to be ramping up operations and dumping a lot more effluent than they did this year, although that may be the case. I just want to bring that up. Two, and I've got just two more to go. Quote, the department also notes that river flows were high due to frequent rains, unquote. Well, in the data graph, there are a week or two missing in July because there was a lot of rain in July, and so they didn't collect any data in July. But let me tell you that the baseline on the Penobscot was an extreme low flow summer all summer long. Sappy's release from Sebago Lake was 270 CFS from June through September 20th, when they increased it to the license minimum of 408 for summer discharge from Sebago Lake. You add in the approximation of 30 cubic feet per second from the DEP model from tributaries below Sebago Lake at low flow times, and you come up with an estimated flow at Westbrook of 300 cubic feet per second. It was a trickle over Sacarapa Falls this summer between rain events, lots of dry rock. And I can't remember a summer it's been run that low. And it was run that low all summer long. So the baseline between rain events was low flow. And lastly, water temperatures. Quote, water temperatures were moderate because the summer was not particularly warm. Really? According to the University of Maine, the Maine statewide climatological summer, June through August 2021, average temp was 65.6 degrees Fahrenheit, making it the fourth warmest summer on record for the 127-year period. It was only 0.1 degrees cooler than the same period in 2020. and above the historic mean by 2.9%. FOPR also notes that water temperatures in Westbrook should generally be lower than pre-2019 conditions, when there was still a 5-mile impoundment immediately upstream of Sac Rapids Dam. All that said, according to the DEP SON data, for less than 2 months, water temperatures exceeded DEP's 7Q10 model from 2011. The temperature for extreme condition is 26 degrees Celsius as the threshold for extreme conditions in that model. And according to their graphic, water temperature in Westbrook exceeded that by six or seven days within that 6 week or so period that they collected data. And those are just the factual corrections I wanted to make. And I wish you a good deliberation and encourage you to follow the trends and upgrade the lower river to Class B without delay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Sells, I believe your hand is up.
Yes, it is. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Scott Sells, and I am the attorney for Friends of Merrymeeting Bay that Mr. Pelletier referred to earlier in the deliberations. I did want to clarify a couple of points that both he and Mr. Kavanaugh made regarding lower classification or the class reclassification to Class B of the Lower Androscoggin segment. I'm seeing a mute sign. Have I been muted? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. So first of all, we need to kind of clarify what's been discussed with respect to Mr. Kavanaugh's comments and Mr. Pelletier's comments about adjusting the NPDES discharge permits. And we did provide data in our most recent comments showing the margins that were available in terms of NPDES discharge compliance. And that, as Mr. Kavanaugh pointed out, the 54% number that he threw out there today was based on one sample, and he did acknowledge that, in fact, there could be discussion and negotiation with respect to the pollutant discharge permits that are currently in place with respect to the Lower Androscoggin. The second point that I would make specifically with respect to some of the conclusions that DEP continues to rely on is to very carefully consider in your next deliberations the fact that we are providing actual data on the Lower Androscoggin concerning it meeting Class B, not hypothetical modeled data, which does not reflect the actual water quality in the downstream segment. And I would again urge, I see that my colleague, Mr. Boak is present, urge some deliberation on whether or not this is in fact a trigger requiring the board to make the recommendation to the legislature. I'd also point out there have been several comments regarding what the water quality of the upstream segment of the Androscoggin is, whether it comes from New Hampshire or elsewhere. What the water quality is really not relevant to whether or not the downstream segment is meeting the higher water quality classification. That is the whole point of the Clean Water Act. It is to get to clean water, not to allow permitted discharges to delay or interfere with the reclassification to a higher class. Finally, to keep so that I may remain brief, I would point out this 100% 24/7 classification that was offered or seems to be considered a longstanding policy by the board. I would encourage the board to carefully consider that policy, because you would have to apply it to every river and every watershed in the state of Maine. That would mean having 24/7 actual data collection methods, which are not done on every river. You would also risk temporary reclassifications based on higher water quality classifications not being able to meet their classification due to extremely warm day or a stretch of warm weather or an unpermitted discharge, all of which right now may or may not occur, but no one can actually say with any certainty because there is no 24/7 monitoring in place. So I think that when you're looking at reclassification, and it was only briefly touched upon in the early part of the deliberations, the board must consider when it is required to do. And Mr. Kavanaugh touched on this as well, but really not in any kind of depth in terms of, well, when a segment is meeting a reclassification, it is required to make the recommendation to the legislature. Modeled results notwithstanding. So that's really going to conclude my comments today. I appreciate the time and thank the board very much.
Well, thank you. I see no further hands raised. I would say that
there's one other person. Ed Friedman would like to speak.
Oh, Ed, yes. I did not see the hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm. Can you hear me, Bob?
I can.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I can't find a hand raising icon on my Zoom, so. Thank you. And I appreciate all you folks putting the time in to deal with this and all sorts of nasty, complicated issues. I really do. Quickly, I did want to point out that our final proposal, the upstream extent of our final proposal is limited to Warumbo Dam. And that's because we haven't received all of the definitive microscopy data on aquatic invertebrates or aquatic life standard back yet. And that's historically that section has been where our most robust data has been. So we have in the past suggested there or Lewiston Falls or Great Falls or Gulf Island Pond, leaving it more up to you guys. But from our standpoint in our latest iteration, which is not reflected in the DEP comments, it is Warumbo. So I want to make that clear. People address the Gulf Island Pond issue, the fallacy of water upstream, having to dictate the quality of water downstream, that sort of negates basic biology that water doesn't absorb oxygen from the atmosphere or other things like rapids and riffles and so forth. Critical flows, again, confusing for everybody, I think. How is that determined in real life? And my sense is that, in fact, critical flows or 7Q10 is really a modeling distinction for the purposes of discharging permits. And as I think Scott said, modeling is not a part of classification. And lastly, I'll just address saturation. The statutes point out that DO saturation percent is looked at as well as milligrams per liter, the concentration, and that the law says that we go with the higher of the two. And I'll point out that saturation is virtually always higher than milligrams per liter, but it seems like 7 or 5 are always the things that come up in conversation. And in fact, it is pretty normal to have a DO of, let's say, 7 or 6.8 even, and the saturation be 75 or 83. So I don't think we pay enough attention to that, and saturation is dictated by heat generally, and the water can only absorb so much oxygen at a given temperature. So I think those are the points I'd like to address. And again, thank you for the opportunity to comment, and I hope you will deliberate well, and I'm sure you will. Thank you.
Thank you. As the presiding officer or chair has the discretion to allow public comment, and it's counted on people to be succinct and to address the actual issues and what they heard and the facts. And I believe the commenters did a good job on that, so I appreciate everyone's effort, and I believe that concludes where we are on this matter on the agenda. Mr. Pelletier.
I did ask, I appreciate the public comment and the opportunity for it, and I don't want to keep the process going longer than it needs to be, but if we have the opportunity for the staff to comment on a number of those things. I don't want to make this a long protracted, but there were a number of comments that were made. But frankly, I had a question about myself. Is there an opportunity? You've been writing notes to the response. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the cons?
Yeah.
And if I may?
Yes, Mr. Book.
Yeah, and I think that is fine if the board would like to have the staff come back up and give some additional information based upon what you've heard in the comments. And if the board would like to deliberate further in light of what you've heard, if the board had questions for me in light of what you've heard, I think all of that is appropriate.
Yes, Ms. Beck, I would agree. I think the more work we do today, the less work we have to do on the 16th. So as much as we can clarify now, I'm perfectly willing if the department wishes to respond to what has been commented so far.
In some respects, I want to apologize for the ask, but it's a great opportunity.
Dig in. That's what we're here for. Dig in.
I guess it needs specifics.
Yeah, I know. I was afraid of that. I'll jump in on any of that, but there was the questions in my mind again. First, the model data versus the actual data, and the fact is that there's quite a bit of information for the lower, and I don't want to ignore the lower presumptive, but the lower Androscoggin, there has been quite a bit of data that's been collected, and again, actual data versus model data is a concern.
Yeah, and I understand that, and you know, we use models to be able to predict the conditions that may not always occur. We're not able to get monitoring data for. We particularly use it in the licensing process. So because in the licensing process, we have to do this evaluation. Does this particular load in combination with the other loads from the dischargers fit under this condition of everyone discharging at their full license limits under the low flow conditions and high temperature? It's almost impossible to create that actual scenario in reality and go get that data. So that's what we use the models for to create that. And so in terms of the lower Androscoggin, there was a model done in 2011 that looked at the impact or the DO levels, predicted DO levels in the river under these critical conditions. At different scenarios, I talked about the creating a boundary condition, you know, that we believe that if the lower section is going to be 7, we're not saying the upper section has to be 7 also or class B, but if we have to create a condition of regulatory controls on the dischargers above the dam so that their discharge is not driving the DO below 7 right at that starting point of the upgrade, right? We can't have class or 5 milligrams per liter or 6 flowing into this new class of 7. So, and we know that we can discern the impact or influence of the discharges all the way to the dam, and potentially they have an influence beyond the dam that hasn't been studied. So we use the model to create that. But in terms of the lower Androscoggin, there was a modeling report done back in 2011. It looked at this boundary condition. What does it look like with the boundary condition of 5 milligrams per liter? What does the lower section look like with the boundary condition of 7 milligrams per liter? And even with the boundary condition of 7, it was predicted that, I believe, was there are 12 sampling points that were used for this to create this model, and 7 of those would be below the criteria of 7 under those critical conditions.
But then again, that was predicted based on 2010 data, and we're seeing actual results, particularly in the lower part of that of the Androscoggin that we're meeting. We are meeting it all the time. And so there's again that question about the model versus new data that we're seeing. And you know, the concept about saturation versus parts per million, that kind of strikes home a little bit, because I'm thinking that there's, you know, from the falls in the Lewiston Auburn area down through the, all those rips and rapids that are coming down through there, good opportunities for oxygenation, and that those
have an opportunity. Yeah, and I understand the point is that 97% of the river is below where is it? This Gulf, I think it's Gulf Island Pond is that's the main stem of the river. So you only got 3% more of water coming into those stretches. But there are, again, good oxygenation opportunities below from the falls on down. And does that provide an opportunity to better meet those standards?
Yeah. I'll make a comment that I'll also invite Rob Moeller, a water quality engineer who's listening online, and he's much more familiar with the data than I am. But I will note that, you know, in a standard saturation curve, at 25 degrees C, you know, the standard is 7 or 75%, whatever is higher. At 75 degrees C, 75% is 6.2. DO level is 6.2. And 80% is 6.61. And 85% is 7.02. So a saturation of 75% doesn't beat the standard at 25 degrees C. It has to be the number of set DO7.
The comment regarding opportunities for introducing more oxygen downstream?
Yeah, certainly there's re-aeration in certain parts of the stream. For sure, that happens. But there's always this pressure of back and forth of DO going down, some areas of being re-aerated. There's influences of periphyton and algae in the evening hours, consuming oxygen and then providing oxygen through photosynthesis during the day. So it fluctuates.
The comment regarding from revised from Warrumble Mill on down. What's your thoughts about that?
I guess I don't have a firm comment on that at this point. We can come back with more information on that. And I would ask Rob Moeller, are you listening? Are you online?
I'm here.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on the saturation issue?
I think you've covered the saturation issue. The question regarding re-aeration, there's not intensive re-aeration. The falls are not operational during low flow times of the year. So that there's no re-aeration occurring from that. I think there's a lot of questions kind of flying up in the air, but I still haven't seen anything that doesn't support what we're saying.
It is a messy process, sorry. But the fact that water doesn't flow over the dam, but there's still water going through those shallow ripples and pools for quite an extended stretch in that area, would that have an influence on the ability to recruit enhanced oxygen? I would think so.
It does. It does, just not to the extent that a fall section would, I don't think anyone's saying where no re-aeration is occurring. Any type of exposure to the atmosphere, there's degrees of re-aeration occurring, you know, and that's, it varies, right? A deeper section of the river, it's much less. A shallower section, it's much greater. But it's, again, very close to the threshold as it is. So it never saturates to greater than 100%, at least not from atmospheric re-aeration.
Friends of the presumptive comments, I assume that was just the fact there was no opposition. That's the point is that the issues that you've been talking about in the lower Androscoggin still remain the same on that stretch of the lower presumptive of the lower Penobscot. So that may have been just an unfortunate way of describing the types of comments and that we'll receive or not receive.
Yeah, the sentence, and I just looked it up, if I can find it again, was a general sentence that covered both the underscoring and the presumpscot. So the multiple comments were for both of those, not specifically one or the other. And for both of those, there were multiples, not just one.
And finally, are there opportunities for future hydro permitting to request public data to be allowed?
I guess potentially, dams are licensed through the FERC process. And during that relicensing process, the department has the opportunity to issue a water quality certification, and there can be conditions there. So I would say potentially that could happen. That's a process dealt with through our land bureau, and when those dams come up for relicensing. So I'd say that's certainly is possible.
Okay, it seems no other eyebrows raised from the board. I would say that the department now has to go back and take the information and the deliberations today and finalize a draft for our consideration. So if anyone has any recommendations they would like to see in that draft, now is a good time to bring them up. Now, Mr. Parker, I'm checking with you too.
I'm all set, Bob.
Okay, thank you. See, no specifics being presented, so you're going to have to guess and make us happy. Good luck with all that. I believe that concludes our session on the water quality review. I suggest maybe it's now noon, and I think we can take care of the rest of the agenda relatively quickly after a five-minute break. Yeah, five-minute break then.
Recording stopped.
That way, Mr. Parker.
I did learn one thing, Bob, during this process. I fished the Spring River part of the Narragansett River my whole life and never knew it was called the Little Narragansett.